Okay, I appreciate you guys being here on time. There's a few people that aren't here yet. So I'll always start class right on time. Sometimes we'll have a quiz at the beginning of class. Usually something very quick, maybe one question. We'll probably have a quiz every week that we don't have an exam, except we won't do one this week, of course. So it's differential equations. And my office, which I'm an adjunct, so I use the adjunct office in 4216A, which is down the hall on the outer loop of this top floor. If you look around, you'll find it. It's a small office, but I'm always there. I'll be there for an hour before class starts, so you're welcome to come visit me during that time. Turns out there's a class that meets in this classroom before us. I think they're out of here by 10 minutes till, but otherwise I would offer to come in here before class, but I don't think we're going to have that opportunity. So let's do the information sheet first. The contact information is at the top. Now, there are two people who, by my reckoning, either do not have the prerequisite or have not substantiated it on the ACC online system. Remember, the prerequisite for this course is Calculus 2. So if you took Calculus 2 at ACC, fill out 1A and say that you made a C or better in the prerequisite course at ACC. So tell me what year and what grade you made in Calc 2. So that's only if you took it at ACC. And actually, that should apply to almost all of you. 1B, if you took it someplace else. Now, there are two or three of you that took the calculus sequence at UT. So the 408C and 408B, I think, are the course numbers at ACC. If you did those courses, go ahead and tell me that in 1B. So I made a C or better, say, in M408D, because that would get you both. That would get you at least Calc 2. And now there should not be a 1C. That would be like testing into this class. You have to have credit in Calculus 2 to be taking this course. But if you think that there is some other way in which you have the prerequisite, let me know in 1C. And then just ignore question 2, and then tell me what your work situation is. I'm taking X credit hours and working X hours per week. Just go ahead and fill that in. I like to look at that to see what your workload is. And then I'll read this. This is from the math department. Many of you probably have seen this kind of sheet before. I understand that my instructor may drop me from the course if I do not have the proper prerequisite course. I also understand that failure to give accurate information about prerequisites is scholastic dishonesty. I affirm that the information I've given here about my fulfillment of the prerequisites is accurate. And then go ahead and sign it. And today is January 21st, if I'm not mistaken. And then just be sure to turn this in before you leave tonight. Now, I've already mentioned I do have access to your transcripts online, at least as much as I can see. And I'm recording the lectures, so I'm not going to name names or call out names of anybody I think it might not. But if you think you don't have the prerequisite for this course or can't substantiate it online, come see me after class. I'm sure we'll have time after class to hang out here a little bit. Yeah, if you haven't gotten the handout from each pile, come on up and get one. There's a sign-in sheet going around. Now, if you go ahead and hand it back to those guys, because I'm sure they haven't signed it yet. Thank you. So it looks like we have almost everybody here. That's good. Usually the very first class meeting we'll be missing one or two students. That's not unusual. They either can't find the campus or whatever the situation is. So I was missing someone for my morning class, first class period. So I mentioned I record the lectures. They're put in MP3 format and loaded on a website that is accessible through Blackboard. If you go to Blackboard, in the course documents section for this course, there's something called Recorded Lectures, and if you click on that, it'll take you to a website that I own, and it's all of the courses that I'm teaching this semester. So this semester it's two classes, and you guys are going to be in the rightmost column, and all the lectures are dated, and so you're free to download the MP3 or just listen to it there. Some people like to listen to the lecture again, or if you happen to be absent one night, you can listen to the lecture, and that will. I find that if there's a topic that maybe I said something about and you're not quite sure what I said or how, you know, maybe you want to hear it again, you might even make a note of the time and then fast forward through the boring part of the lecture and get to that interesting thing. I mean, I'll just admit, I can't listen to my own lectures. It's just too boring. So, hopefully I'm not boring. But, you know, once you know this material, you don't need to hear it again, I guess. Come on in. Yep, so go ahead and get one from each pile. Now, you also have the homework list. And so that's for the entire course. I do reserve the right to make changes as needed. And the sections that are marked with an asterisk, what that means is that I'd like to get to them if we have time, but there's a good chance that we won't have time. And so we may do some of these asterisk sections, but we may not. So if you have your heart set on one particular section that happens to be marked, you might want to read it, come ask me, see if we're going to have time to do it. But as it is, we're going to cover an awful lot of material in this course. I think the number of sections that we will definitely cover is 39 sections. Just as a point of comparison, when I teach Math 1332, which is contemporary mathematics here at ACC, we only are required to teach 26 sections. And, you know, that still fills up a semester. So 39 sections is a lot of material. There's homework from each section, but you'll see some of these, like 6.6, there's three problems. You know, 8.2, if we do it, there's one problem. Toward the end, 11.1, 11.2, 11.3, 11.4, you know, no more than four problems in a section. So, now sometimes those problems can take a lot of time. Don't be fooled. Just be sure to budget enough time to do the homework. And there's just no substitute. I don't know if you guys are excellent mathematicians or struggling, or, you know, I guess I'll find out as the semester progresses, but come on up and get one from each pile, one handout. But there's really no substitute for just doing the homeworks. Now, some of you, I know how this works, right? You're going to go look this stuff up on YouTube or find another book or something, or maybe a solution manual. That's fine, except that if at the end of that process you don't know how to do the problem or whatever it is, what have you really accomplished? There should be some struggle in doing the homework. If there's no struggle, then there's no learning. If you just find the solution on YouTube and write it down. I had a student come to me a couple of semesters ago and say, I found this solution on YouTube. Is that all right if I just write it down? I was not a happy camper that day with that particular student. So I'm old school in that respect. If you don't do the work, you're gonna have trouble in this class. So, okay. Let's see. The textbook. Anybody in here have the textbook? Okay, so a few people. I think this is actually a really good textbook. My only complaint about it is chapters 11, or no, 9, 10, and 11 are not printed. They are not in the textbook anymore. They're online. Now, it's free. You can go and get those chapters. There's a website. In fact, I have the link to it in Blackboard. If you go look in the course documents section, you'll find a link to those chapters. And there we are going to do 9, 10, and 11. So you're going to need to. I mean, they're just PDFs. You can download them. You can do whatever you want. You can go look at them right now. But otherwise, I think this is an excellent book. Now, if you don't have the book, you can get access through Wiley. This is Wiley. They have something called Wiley Plus, which you may have heard. Some of our other courses, we have something called First Day Access. I don't think we've negotiated anything with Wiley yet for First Day Access. So you're not being charged a fee for this course. But so if you want to use the online material, then you're going to have to pay, and I don't even know how much it is, probably $100 or something, to get access to the ebook. And they also have, it's like MyMathLab and WebAssign, some of these other homework systems you may be familiar with from other courses. So Wiley Plus, I'm not going to do any homework from Wiley Plus. I'm making it available to you for access to the textbook only. And there may be a grace period, like you can get access for 2 weeks or something, and then they shut it off. I haven't really looked into that. I've been in email communication with the reps, so I know I can get questions answered, but that wasn't the question that I asked them yet. So how many of you plan to buy the printed textbook if you don't already have it? So a few hands go up. Okay. You might want to make sure that you go to the bookstore soon, because bookstores now no longer stock enough textbooks for everybody, because they assume that most people are going to go out and rent them or buy them someplace else. And it's a very disturbing development as far as I'm concerned, but that's just the nature of the beast. So if you're going to go out and buy the printed textbook at an ACC bookstore, do it soon, or order it soon, because these things, especially at the beginning of a semester, it takes forever to get them to you. They may promise it in a day, but some of these places don't deliver as fast as they promise they will. And we have a homework assignment due a week from Thursday. And you're going to need the textbook for the homework. Yes?
Can you let us know what sections that's going to be due next Thursday?
Yeah, so the way it'll work, if you go to the back page of the syllabus, you see the schedule. And I have it laid out day by day. So all 16 weeks, including and then a 17th week for spring break. And each week there's a Tuesday and a Thursday. And the sections on the Tuesday and the sections on the Thursday, you combine those, and that's the homework that's due the following week. So what's going to be due next week? 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, and 2.1. So those four sections will be due next Thursday. And we'll talk about how to submit the homework on Thursday. I'll say a few words about it. But you'll have the weekend to do it. And then you come in on Tuesday with questions about homework, and we can entertain those questions. Did that?
One additional follow-on question.
Sure.
Are you grouping them together, like each week?
Yeah, so it's just one assignment per week. So it'll be four sections in that week.
Okay.
And then, you know, the next week will be just two sections, 2.2, 2.3. You know, there's some question about weighting. Is it fair? More questions on one week than another. But I think that, you know, what we're really seeing is that the difficulty of the questions, of the homework problems is about the same from week to week. You're not going to have any weeks off, particularly this semester, especially with DiffyQ. It just doesn't work that way. And it gets harder. The first few weeks are going to be easy, and then it'll just get mind-blowingly hard. Okay, so the textbook, so you have two choices. You can go to the... go find some bookstore or some Amazon or, you know, some rental place online or whatever. Get a copy of the textbook. Get it soon. Start using it. Now, be aware that there is a second edition of this book, but it doesn't have the same problems. The problem numbers are different. And so you would not, I mean, you can buy the book. I mean, I have a whole library of differential equations textbooks, but I don't know how good it is. That'll do you for doing the homework. And then the other option is to just use the Wiley Plus. Now, there is a flyer. Again, it's in Blackboard. There is a link to the PDF, which is the flyer for the course. It'll instruct you on where to go online. There's a six-digit code, which you will enter, that's given to you in the flyer. You'll pay some money, and then you'll have access to all of their materials, including the ebook. So, and you should let me know as soon as possible if there are any problems with that, so I can get them sorted out with the publisher. Any questions about the textbook?
So we need that edition, that specific edition.
Yeah. I mean, it's the price of doing business in college, right? I mean, it's an unfortunate consequence of the fact that college has gotten so expensive. Textbooks have also gotten expensive. So, but you know, it would be unreasonable to expect me to create a whole course without using a textbook, to put it that way. And also, the math department doesn't allow me to do that anyway. So they want to see the assignments coming out of the textbook or some online system that they've approved. Okay. We're going to probably use Mathematica at some point during the semester. You will not be required to buy it. It is expensive. But all of the learning labs here at ACC have Mathematica. And so... we'll talk about that more when we get to that point in the course. Graphing calculators are fine, but I'm going to hopefully design problems so that you can't really get a whole lot of information from your graphing calculator. I want you to be able to solve these problems using this thing up here, you know, the old-fashioned way. So, now, as I'm just going to quickly... look at the highlights of this. There's also something called ACC College Policies. We are no longer required to hand those out. And that's why you'll see still the syllabi are often a lot shorter nowadays than they used to be. But those ACC policies are, again, there's a PDF and a link to that PDF in Blackboard. And so if you're a person that doesn't use Blackboard, at least use it to get these documents that you need. Okay. One thing I would say about homework is assigned every Thursday and due the following Thursday, but you already know the assignment for the whole semester. I will drop the lowest homework grade. I've already mentioned quizzes. Please do not plan to miss any exams. I'm notoriously hard to work with on making up exams. And it has to be some sort of real emergency or something like that. Also, notice on the bottom of page 2, it says the instructor may require a valid ACC photo ID for in-class exams. All of our exams will be in class. If you don't have an ACC photo ID, I know it because your face shows up as a river bat with a question mark in it. The rest of you have a photo, and this allows me to get to know you guys a little bit better and also to avoid any fraud or anything like that. So the ACC IDs are free. Just go get one. Get it out of the way. Our first exam will be on the fourth week. So if you don't have your ACC ID by then, I won't allow you to take the exam. Okay. Final withdrawal date is April 27th. If you're failing the course at that point, I will strongly recommend that you withdraw. It's better to get a W than to get a D or an F. Hopefully you won't be in that boat. But, you know, that's what they all say, right? So just work real hard to make sure that you get A's on the first couple of exams, and then you won't have to worry about that. All email to me has to be through the ACC email system. I will not respond to emails that come from your personal account that are not ACC emails. And that's to protect you, and it protects me. It's a requirement from the department and from the college. You know, you'd be surprised how many students' mothers try to intervene and have discussions with the teacher and stuff like that. It's crazy, but okay. I think that's it as far as the handouts. Are there any questions about the course or anything? Yes.
Are you covering matrix math?
Yep.
Like the concepts involved.
Well, I'm not going to do any serious theory matrices, but we are going to do eigenvalues and eigenvectors, and we'll use matrices to solve systems of differential equations.
Can you say that you explained how to use those matrices for those concepts?
Yeah, I don't assume that you know eigenvalues and eigenvectors, or really. I mean, you probably have seen matrices at some point. And I would expect that you know how to add and subtract matrices and multiply by constant, maybe multiply two matrices. But that's not going to be an issue for us. The only thing we're going to do with matrices is eigenvalues and eigenvectors. Where it gets interesting is with the complex eigenvalues. Any other questions about the course? Now, where's the sign-in sheet? Has anybody not signed the sign-in sheet? Wow, okay. And everybody, let's see, so let me just quick count. 2, 4, 6, 8. Perfect. Okay. You guys are my heroes. It's good to get everybody here on the first day. Again, I'm showing that there are two people who may not have the prerequisite. So tomorrow is actually the last ad drop day. And if you talk to me tonight, you might be able to avoid paying money that you shouldn't have to pay if you aren't going to be in this course. If you don't have the prerequisite, I will drop you. Probably by the end of this week. Usually what happens is you do have the prerequisite, but for some reason, I don't know it, and you've given the transcript to an ACC counselor, but it will take months, literally months, for them to get that information online. So you may have already given it to them, but I can't begin to see it for a while. Okay, so no questions? You guys are all good? How many of you are engineering majors? Raise your hand if you're majoring in engineering. How many, anybody in physics? One person in physics, okay. There are a few people that didn't raise their hand. What else are you, what are you majoring in?
Math.
Math? Math, good, good. Okay, yeah. Computer science, okay. Is DIFIQ required for computer science?
At
A&M. A&M, okay. Yeah, they've got a whole, they've got a, what do you call it, a group over at Highland, which captures most of them, I think. But you like Northridge better?
I'm closer to Northridge.
Yeah, okay, I know how that goes. Cohort was the word I was trying to think of. Anybody else? So math, computer science, physics, engineering. What kind of engineering?
Double E.
Double E?
Civil.
Anybody mechanical?
Petroleum.
Chemical.
Aerospace.
All those people need differential equations. Yep. I was an engineer for 20 years. I've worked with a lot of double E's and mechanical engineers. My brother was an aero-astro major at University of Illinois for a while. I actually got my undergraduate degree in physics, engineering physics, from University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. I also have a master's degree in applied mathematics and a PhD in cognitive and neural systems, which is basically robotics and artificial intelligence. We use differential equations a lot in the modeling of neural networks. And biology uses it a lot. Anybody, I guess nobody in here is in biology. Okay. So, not that that's any particular favorite of mine. A lot of the way I'm going to be thinking about this material and trying to teach it to you is very traditional engineering and physics. And that will be adequate, I think, for computer science and math. Those of you who said math, are you guys applied math or pure math? Or have you decided yet?
I'm pure math.
Pure math? Okay. I knew a pure mathematician who never took differential equations. And she's a professor of computer science now at UT. But I think it's important to know differential equations if you're a math major. Although there's a big difference between applied math and pure math. So if you ever want to talk about the distinction or, you know, whatever, let me know. My brother is actually a pure mathematician, and he and I have arguments all the time about stuff like that. But, okay. So the reason I ask these questions, I like to get to know kind of where you guys are coming from and reinforce my belief that it is important that we understand your needs. A lot of the math teachers here have never done any engineering work or physics. And so it's good to see you guys are making your way through the system. So what I'm going to do tonight, covering three sections seems pretty ambitious. I'll do what I can tonight, and then we'll finish up hopefully on Thursday. And really what I want to do is just do a few examples. Now, some of you may already know some about differential equations. If you've taken some physics, you know, I actually, as a physics major, I learned most of my differential equations from my physics classes. And that's fine. hopefully we'll balance the applications with the theory, with maybe a more emphasis on the applications. So let's just do something really simple. Which all? How many of you? By the way, how many of you have not had a physics course at the college level? Raise your hand if you've not had a physics course at the college level. And by that I mean general physics, engineering physics. So three or four of you are raising your hand. By the way, when I say things like that, three or four of you are raising your hand, I'm documenting it for the recording. So people who are listening to this outside of this classroom will know what we're talking about. So I'm not going to teach physics, but sometimes the applications will be pretty physics-y. Is that a word? I don't know. So if you ever find that I'm using concepts from physics that you don't know or not comfortable with, just let me know and I'll either explain or reroute. Okay, so something very simple. So y is equal to y double prime is equal to negative g. So can you tell me what that differential equation is referring to?
Acceleration due to gravity?
Yeah, so g is the acceleration due to gravity. So what is this differential equation describing? Okay, so y double prime would be d squared y dt squared. Let's use t instead of x. So now this textbook that we're using is going to use the prime notation a lot. So we're assuming that y of t is the function that we're trying to solve for. You might say, well, why even do differential equations at all? If you haven't done anything in physics or seen them before, well, the reason is because it's a language that allows you to express rates of change and relationships between rates of change and other things. So what this is saying is that the acceleration, and we're going to assume that this is in a vertical direction, is equal to negative some constant. We're assuming that g is a positive constant here. And those of you who have physics, you know that g is equal to 9.8 meters per second squared. And in the MKS system, meters, MKS, the S is seconds, the K is kilometers, what's the M? Huh? Maybe I'm thinking of anyway. Kilograms, that's right, kilograms, mass. Okay, so, yeah, MKS is what we now call SI, System International. So you guys know the 9.8, right? Everybody knows that, right? So how would you solve this?
Take the integral of that twice?
Sure. So this is basically what this is saying is d by dt of dy dt, that's what y double prime means. So if we multiply both sides by dt, you get d of dy dt is equal to negative g dt. Now, how do you undo a differential? Take the indefinite integral. So integrate both sides. So the integral of a differential, these undo each other. So you get dy dt, which we recognize as v. So this is going to be v is equal to, now negative g dt, I'm going to assume that you guys know how to integrate, at least at this level. So this is negative what? Now don't go repeating the kinematic equations. We're one step at a time here. So v is equal to negative gt plus c. because this is an indefinite integral, and there's going to be an unknown constant of integration. And now, how do we figure out what C is? Which is, what is it? Huh?
Zero.
Always?
Depends on the situation.
If I throw the ball up initially, so I have some sort of positive initial velocity, or I could throw it down, that would have some sort of negative.
T0.
Okay, so let's say at t equals zero, what are we going to call this thing? So v of zero, what do you want to call that?
V naught.
That's always a good choice. So we don't know what it is, but it's going to turn out to be a constant in our problem. So if we set t equals zero, we get v naught is equal to, this term goes away, is equal to c. So now we have v of t is equal to negative gt plus v naught, and that should be recognized as one of the kinematic equations that you learn in general physics or engineering physics 1. Yes?
One quick question. Where do you get v from again?
Where do I get what?
The v from.
V is defined to be dy dt. So v is dy dt. It's the rate of change of the position with respect to time. And then, now what's the next step? We're trying to solve for y here.
Just integrate again.
Yeah, so this is the same as dy dt. So multiply both sides by dt, you get dy is equal to negative gt plus v naught all times dt. And when you integrate, you get y is equal to negative gt squared over 2, so negative g over 2 t squared plus v naught t plus another c. Now I probably should, you know, once we see that there are more than one c, we probably should label these. I'm going to call this c1, and then I'm going to call this c2, just to avoid any confusion. And then, now how do you figure out what c2 is?
Another initial condition.
It's another initial condition, so what do we mean by initial condition?
Usually that's
t equals zero. And so if t is equal to zero, then y of zero, what do we want to call that? How about y naught? Okay. And so we put y naught here. So y naught is equal to, this term goes away, this term goes away, is equal to c2. Therefore, now I will often use a right arrow like that to indicate therefore. And so therefore, we go ahead and plug in the C2, which is y naught, into here. So we get y of t is equal to negative g over 2 t squared plus v naught t plus y naught. And that is our other kinematic equation. I would classify this one as another one that you get for free in this process. Now, some of the stuff you can actually derive algebraically. You don't need calculus to do this, but there comes a point where you just can't do enough with the algebra by itself, so you need calculus. And this is a differential equation. It's probably one of the simplest that you're going to see all semester. Any questions on this example? So what did we see here? Well, we had our differential equation that we were trying to solve. We threw up a couple of initial conditions as we needed them. Sometimes we'll be given those initially. Sometimes we'll have to kind of infer them. But these were the two initial conditions. And once you have your differential equation and your initial conditions, you can find the constants of integration. Now, we're not always going to be integrating to solve differential equations. In fact, if that's all there was to solving differential equations, we wouldn't have to have a separate course. You guys saw this in Calc 2, if you took it at ACC, and many of you did. Chapter 7 in our textbook does separable differential equations. And so, the you know, where things get really interesting is when you... Integration by itself isn't going to do the job. So, now, I really want to get through some, you know, basic examples. We're going to get some terminology. The first chapter is really kind of a hodgepodge of topics. And so there's no way in one class period that I can possibly cover everything in that first chapter. So it would be a good idea, once you get your textbook, to just go ahead and read the first chapter. And you'll see that the book might say things a little different than I say it. It might cover it more completely in some respects. But hopefully, you know, we're all on the same page with this stuff. Okay, so I'm going to erase this. Any questions? Is this easy? You can be honest. So far, easy, right? Okay. Let's do a little different. So, dt dt, so this is a big T and this is a little t, is equal to k times big T minus t naught. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, this is not quite correct. And so we're going to discover why it's not quite correct, and we're going to fix it. The reason I do stuff like that is because you won't always be given the differential equation. You're going to have to sometimes come up with it on your own. And then not only come up with it, but solve it. So, anybody recognize that differential equation or know what it pertains to? Say again?
Thermodynamics?
Yes. Well, obviously the T, big T, is probably temperature. So something from thermodynamics. If you're a physics major, you're going to take thermo in your probably your third year. Yes?
Newton's law of cooling.
Yes, Newton's law of cooling. Very good. Now, I said this was not right. Let's assume that K is greater than zero. And you can see what's going to happen. By the way, what is T naught?
Initial temperature.
No, it's not the initial temperature.
Ambient temperature?
It's what?
Ambient
temperature. Now, in a complicated environment, the ambient temperature might be changing. We're not going to do anything that complicated today. But now, the initial temperature, you might say, well, why do we call it T naught? I did. You know, probably a better way to label it would be T sub A for ambient. And then if you had, say, T of zero, well, then you could call that T naught, but I don't want to write that because I've already used T naught for ambient. So let's say that T naught is the ambient temperature. And we can... It doesn't matter at this point for this problem what system, what units we're talking about, whether it's Kelvin or Fahrenheit or Celsius or whatever, will matter when we start to graph it or you know, specific numbers. But when you're talking about the difference of temperatures, it doesn't make... the difference between, say, Celsius and Fahrenheit is going to be absorbed into this constant K anyway. And the whole point of temperature is that you can subtract them, and it's differences of temperature that make a difference in thermodynamics. So, now, one of the things that you're going to learn in this course is how to look at a differential equation and make sense out of it without having to solve it. And as a physicist, and, you know... So, have you actually taken, like, what does this course have been taken? I'm curious.
Physics 2.
Okay, so Are you at UT or are you still here at ACC? Okay. You know, we like to see physics majors. One of the things that my physics professors beat into my head was you should be able to look at an equation and get, you know, glean information from the equation without having to solve it. You know, understand every term in the equation. Understand every variable. Make sure that you know why there's a K there. You know, what is this really saying about the long-term behavior? Well, okay, long-term behavior. If you're cooling, let's say you got your cup of coffee or whatever, and you take it out of the microwave and now you put it here on the table, what's going to happen?
Depends on your environment.
Well, let's assume that we're not on Mercury. Okay. So, or Venus, even. That's a pretty hot place. Let's say we're in this room. So, room temperature. What's going to happen to your cup of coffee? It's going to cool. But is it just going to cool and cool forever until it becomes absolute zero and freeze? And no, it's going to do what? It's going to cool to the ambient temperature and then it's going to stop cooling. Otherwise, it's violating the second law of thermodynamics. So, now, how do we know that it stopped cooling? Well, the dT/dt is going to be zero. Right? The rate of change of the temperature with respect to time is going to be zero at that moment. Well, so as long and how do you get this expression here to be zero?
T is equal to T naught.
Big T is equal to T naught, the ambient temperature. So as soon as it reaches ambient temperature, it's going to stop cooling. So, but let's suppose that you take it out of the microwave and it's hot, right? It's really hot coffee or whatever. So big T is bigger than T naught. And so this is a positive quantity. And this positive quantity multiplied by a positive quantity is going to give you what?
Positive.
A positive quantity. So this right here would be greater than zero. And what's that say about the temperature? It's going to do what?
It's going to cool.
Is it going to cool? It's going to increase. I told you at the beginning that this is wrong. We've got to figure out why it's wrong. Okay? So, if the temperature of the coffee is greater than room temperature, according to this model, this is positive times positive is positive, and so the dT/dt is going to be positive, which means temperature is going to increase. Is that physically possible? No. How do you fix the model? You put a negative sign in front. And now things are going to work right. At least, we hope, sort of. Right? So now when the coffee comes out, it's hot. It's hotter than ambient. So this is positive. This is positive, but now you have a negative sign here. So this whole thing becomes negative. dT dT is negative. What does that mean? Temperature is going to go down. I mean, this is calc 1, right? Just think, what does the derivative tell you? And differential equations is just an equation that has derivatives in it. So now we've got the correct expression for Newton's law of cooling. And now, without solving it, and by the way, we can solve this. You do have the mathematical tools at your disposal to solve this thing right now. But we don't need to solve it today. We can graph the long-term behavior. What is the equilibrium temperature?
T
naught, the ambient temperature. Now, if there's anybody sleeping, what should I do with them? Should I wake them up? Well, there's certain legal constraints. I don't want to point out anybody in particular, but we got somebody who's nodding off. Let me just say, I know you've had a long day. This person's still nodding off. But if you go to sleep on me, I will embarrass you.
Drop a heavy load?
No, I'll just walk over and tap you on the shoulder. Okay? We got to establish the protocol early on. So my teachers in college would just throw erasers at me. But we're not allowed to do that anymore. So okay, so if this is T versus little t, now you notice I have some negative territory here for the temperature, that I could do something that was like Celsius or Fahrenheit. If it was absolute temperature at Kelvin, then it would just be above the, you know, t equals zero. But so let's suppose that this value right here is t naught, which is, we're going to assume is positive. And now what happens if the temperature is above T naught initially? Let's say right there. Now you might say, well, wait, initial would be on the T equals zero axis. Well, okay, fine. But I'm going to draw it from here. So what's going to happen? Well, T minus T naught is positive times negative gives you a negative. So dt dt is negative, and it will actually approach this asymptotically. We can prove that, but we don't know that necessarily from looking at the equation, but with a little experience you'll recognize that it has to be asymptotic. And then now what happens if the temperature is below? You might say, well, wait a minute. They call it Newton's law of cooling, but what if I take my orange juice out of the refrigerator? What's going to happen? And I set it down. What's going to happen? It's the temperature of the orange juice is going to increase. So if it, let's say it was here initially, then it would actually asymptotically approach that equilibrium point. Why do we call it equilibrium?
Because it doesn't move while it's there.
Once it gets there, it doesn't move. Now that's, okay, yes and no. I'll buy that. You know, the flapping butterfly wings, you know that story, right? The butterfly in Japan flapping its wings can change the weather in the United States. It's really true. It can. Little perturbations can cause massive changes if you have chaos, if you have nonlinear systems with feedback. But nothing like that going on here. Okay, so, okay. What else would you call the equilibrium?
Because there's no difference in potential energy.
Well, we haven't really talked about potential energy yet. I'm not sure how you would define that in this context.
Everything goes towards it? Or away from it?
Okay, so, well, we'll get into it a little bit more. I mean, the answer that I'm looking for is the long-term behavior is that. But, not quite. It's a little bit more complicated than that. Okay. Okay, I'm going to call this plot, this is a plot of T versus T. And you might say, well, why do I even care what I call it? Well, because we're going to see other kinds of graphs in this course, and I want you to be able to tell the difference between them. Okay. Let's do... Now, this is problem number 8 from section 1.1. I'm going to write this down. So, it's... Uh, you don't have the book, so you don't know what that problem is, but can you guess, just based on your knowledge of physics, what this problem is talking about? So MdVdt is equal to negative mg minus gamma, this is the Greek letter gamma, lowercase gamma, times v. Yeah, this is a drag term, also known as air resistance, friction, wind resistance, however you want to call it. So, now why did I write MdVdt as opposed to y double prime? Well, because it's a different concept, right? What is MdVdt?
Acceleration.
Yeah, well, so mass times A, so this is acceleration. Are these laws of physics coming back to you a little bit as we talk about this stuff? Yeah, so this is force on the left side. The y double prime, what is that? Is that force?
Acceleration.
It's acceleration, it's not force. So, and in fact, that equation wasn't minus mg, it was equal to minus g. So, totally different equation. I mean, related, but different. If I ignored air resistance and multiply both sides by m, then you would get mdVdt is equal to negative mg. And that's the connection between those two. But, and there's different ways to write this. One thing I would challenge you to do, go home tonight and think about this. Why is this a minus sign? Assuming that gamma is positive. Okay, so now we're not being asked to solve this. In problem 8, it says show that, and then let me just write this down. We could probably solve it now, but we're going to get there very quickly. So V is equal to V naught plus mg over gamma times e to the negative gamma t over m minus mg over gamma. That's the solution. And you won't always be so lucky as to have me give you the solution, but at this early stage in the course, sometimes that's going to happen. And what it's, the problem says, show that this is a solution. How would you do that? I mean, just in general. What?
Take the derivative.
Okay. Why take the derivative?
Because you're, well, multiply by mass and take a derivative in order to make the right side of the equation match your gain.
Okay, so what you're going to do is you're going to plug it into this equation and see if it satisfies. Okay, that's good. So if a problem asks you to show that some function satisfies a differential equation, that does not mean that you are supposed to set out to find the solution. They're giving you the solution. They give you the solution, and then you, all you have to do is verify that it's a solution. And how do you do that? You plug it into the differential equation, and you see if both sides are equal, you know, does it satisfy the equation? It's just like you test any answer to any problem that you have, see if it satisfies the original problem. Okay, so now V naught is a constant, M is a constant, G is a constant, gamma is a constant. So this thing in parentheses is a constant. Gamma over M is a constant. The only variable so far on this right-hand side is T. Because it's presumably V of T. Right? So we're going to differentiate with respect to T. In fact, it's telling us to do that. So let's go ahead and do that. So dVdt. Now, you know, when I look at a problem like this, one of the things I do is I know how to finesse the problem. You guys may not know how to finesse the problem yet. If somebody says, take the derivative, you've been programmed since Calculus 1 to just flat out bash out the derivative, simplify it in all of its glory, and I'm like, no, I want to leave enough behind so that it'll make it easy to show that it's actually a solution. So I'm going to finesse it a little bit. And there's no hard and fast way of doing that. It's just, sometimes it's better to go, there's an old saying, the hurrier I go, the behinder I get. Have you ever heard that expression? My mother is from Kentucky, and they talk like that in Kentucky. The hurrier I go, the behinder I get. In other words, sometimes you're better off if you slow down a little bit and think before you jump into doing something. And don't do any algebra until you have to. That's another one of my mottos. Right? Because you can get lost in the algebra. You don't want to do that. So this is a constant, so just leave it as a constant. So you got V naught plus mg over gamma. And then you're going to differentiate that. Well, how do you differentiate that? It's negative gamma over m e to the negative gamma t over m. What is this? It's a constant, so the derivative of the constant is zero. So this is the derivative. Okay, so now what I want to do is you could multiply this all out, and that's where I'm saying I want to finesse it a little bit. So now I'm going to take this and I'm going to multiply it by m. So you get m times this thing. So v naught plus mg over gamma. And you still might want to, you're tempted because of your programming, you know, obsessive compulsive thing, you want to move this out in front. Well, you don't have to do that. Just, you know, calm down. Just leave it there. So minus gamma over m e to the negative gamma t over m. And then, so that's the left side. And then equals, and I'm going to put a question mark over the equal sign. And when you do that, when you have a question mark over an equal sign, it means you can't do anything that's going to operate on both sides of the equation. At this moment, all you can do is simplify the left side, simplify the right side, until they become equal. Because I don't know that it's an equation. You know, something equals something. You can't just do ordinary equation processing on it because you don't know that it's actually an equation. Then what do you get? Minus mg minus gamma v. Now what is v? Okay, so now we're told what v is, right? So notice I use square brackets. Just instinctively, I'm just going to drop v in here. So this is v naught plus mg over gamma e to the negative gamma t over m minus mg over gamma. Close bracket. I want to know, are those two things equal? Well, now, again, I'm just going slow. Just a little bit at a time, you know. And finesse this thing. I see a V naught plus mg over gamma here. I see a V naught plus mg over gamma there. I don't want to do anything that's going to disrupt that. So I think the first step is I'm just going to cancel these m's. Because, I see a gamma here and there's no m underneath it. Okay. Now, on the right side, question mark, I'm going to distribute the gamma. And so I get negative mg and then minus gamma times v naught plus mg over gamma e to the negative gamma t over m Now, if I distribute the minus gamma, what happens over here? Becomes plus, and then the gammas cancel, and you get mg. Next step, on the right side, cancel. So you got negative mg here and positive mg there. Now, I'm not just going through and canceling stuff, right? I'm looking to see, is this going to make my life better? Because what we're going to end up with is a negative gamma times this, negative gamma times this, done. Do you see how those are equal? I mean, I could write one more step. I could either move the negative gamma out to here, or I could just move this negative gamma into here. That would make it obvious, but right now it's pretty obvious to me anyway. So, okay? Now let's draw a graph. Actually, okay, so before we do that, what do you expect? So any questions about this? By the way, if I say any questions, that's your opportunity to ask questions. You're paying good money to be in this classroom. So I don't want to just, you know, go blindly ahead if you guys have questions. We're all good? Easy, breezy piece of cake? Mixing metaphors there? Okay, so how would you find the equilibrium value? Two ways. Do you see both ways? Do you see one way? What is the equilibrium value? By the way, is there an equilibrium value? If you jump out of an airplane, how many in here have jumped out of an airplane? One person? Only one? I have jumped out of an airplane. Yes, it was the scariest thing I ever did in my entire life, but I did it. Always make sure there's a parachute attached. What happens when you jump out of an airplane? They train you, right?
Yeah.
And what do they tell you is going to happen?
You're going to get pushed up a lot. I mean, I did this when I was like eight.
Eight? You gotta go back and do it again. It's okay. I don't know if I'm ever gonna do it again. I mean, it was literally the scariest thing I ever did. It was so terrifying. But and the guy, you know, they hook a human being onto you the first time you do it. They're like literally chains. They're not taking any chances that I'm going to go crazy and separate myself from the parachute. So, but he had to actually, like, get me out of the airplane because that was how terrified I was. But I don't mind admitting that. Whew! That was hard. It was good afterwards, but... Okay, so... So yeah, you fall, and before you pull the chute, before you know, there's this cord, the rip cord, you're just falling. Now, eventually you're going to reach terminal velocity, but that terminal velocity is very fast, and if you hit the ground at that velocity, you're dead. That's why you need a chute. But what happens when you open the chute? Yeah, there's this, you know, I don't remember that it was an uncomfortable sensation. You know, you just, you know, you there you are. Now you got a chute above you. What happens with the chute?
Increases drag.
It increases drag, but what else happens?
It slows you
a lot. What else happens?
Changes your equilibrium speed.
It changes your equilibrium speed. What does that mean?
It's more drag.
You guys aren't getting there, right? Yes,
I agree. More drag, slows you down. The point is, you come to another terminal velocity. You actually are not speeding up. You could go all day at this speed, and you land, and you're like, that wasn't bad. You reach a constant velocity.
So you're going to say?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The drag point.
Well, the drag by itself is not going to make it give you a constant velocity, but over a long enough period of time, you're going to reach a constant velocity. How do you know it's going to be constant? Anybody look at this and tell me how?
Your acceleration due to gravity is the same as your deceleration due to drag.
Well, what is? How do you get that? Yeah, tell me where that came from.
When mg equals gamma b.
Which means what? dv dt is?
Zero.
Yeah, zero. So the left side has to be zero. That's what we mean by equilibrium. So the rate of change is zero. So you set this equal to zero, and now you can solve for b. So I'm going to add gamma b to both sides. So you get gamma b is equal to negative mg, and now divide by gamma, you get b is equal to negative mg over gamma. That is your terminal velocity. Can you see that from this equation?
Can you repeat what you said?
Can you see that from this equation? You want me to go back another sentence? Okay, so the terminal velocity is negative mg over gamma. We derived it by setting mdvdt equals to zero and solving, setting the right hand side equal to zero and solving for b, then we get the terminal velocity. Now, I could potentially be not convinced that this is a terminal velocity, because you may never reach that. Why are we guaranteed to reach it? Another way of asking the question is, can you see that from this equation that this is the terminal velocity? This is the thing that my physics professor is pounding into my head. Yes?
When time is zero, everything goes away.
Time is zero? E to the zero is one. Yes?
When mg, mass times gravity over... Sorry, I'm not running the name of that.
You don't want to set this equal to zero.
No, when that is equal, or when that cancels out the inside of the parentheses and your same coefficient over...
No, you're working too hard. That won't give you the answer.
When that is equal to the simplification of that.
No, because v is not equal to zero.
Are you taking
v is equal to this thing?
I'm saying combined when the combination of the left side of the right side of the equation. And
when does that happen? Tell me when that happens. T equals what?
Infinity.
Say again.
Infinity.
Infinity. Yeah, take a limit as t goes to infinity. E to the negative, so gamma is positive, m is positive. So if you take t goes gets big, and it doesn't have to be very big. If you're an electrical engineering major, you know about the time constant in capacitors, right? So a few time constants, and this thing is going to get super small, and so no, it won't make any contribution. This will be your terminal velocity. So if t is big, and we'll just call it t equal infinity, this goes to what?
Zero.
Zero times anything is zero. Zero minus this thing is negative mg over gamma. So that's where we get that. Okay? Now, this is problem number 8. I've done some of the work for you on this problem. I recommend that you just try to do parts B, C, and D. By the way, when I make those recommendations, Why am I making the recommendation? Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll help you learn it, but it will also... one of the things that I do... I'm just like an ordinary person. I take a problem that we worked on in class, and I'll say, you know, I want to be really nice to these people. I'm just going to give them the same problem and see what they do with it. And you know what happens half the time? Half of them have never seen the problem before. I could put the same problem on the test, and the next day someone comes and says, we didn't talk about that at all. Yes, we did. Okay. So, let's let that be section 1.1. Any questions on this? Basically, what we've talked about are some examples of looking at differential equations, verifying solutions for differential equations, some modeling. Now, basically, a differential equation is going to allow you to either represent a physical law or model a system or, it doesn't have to be a law of physics. It can be a law of psychology. Learning laws, for example, or biological systems or,
probability.
We can model that using differential equations, absolutely. So... okay, so I'm going to erase all this. Any questions before I erase all this? Yes?
When you actually get the answer, is it necessary you actually know the application for what you're solving, even if you actually get the actual answer?
Well, if I just wrote this down and said solve it, you wouldn't necessarily know what G meant, or M, or gamma, or even V. That makes for a kind of an unsatisfying relationship with the problem. I mean, I think you should know what the problem is talking about. We're going to see a lot of problems where it's going to be y double prime plus 3y minus 7, or equals, 3y prime minus 7y equals 0. Solve. I don't know why it is, but... We'll have those kinds of problems. And the best I can say is that sometimes you're going to know the physical application, sometimes not. If you're curious, ask. Other questions? Yes?
Just kind of a follow-on. So just to be clear, the applications of the problem isn't part of, the text.
I'm not big on you writing essays.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
Yeah, if every now and then I will ask. I think my last Calc 3 exam, I said define the osculating plane. You might have to use some words sometimes, but that's not the emphasis in the course. Okay. Any other questions?
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
Wasn't the oscillating plane covered in that same lecture in Cal 3?
The same lecture as what?
Like, that's not a new concept. That was something taught in the lecture.
Well, it was a final exam question.
But when you say, hey, that's... you might need to know some words. That's words you have presented in the lecture material.
Oh, I talked about it, yeah. No, I'm not going to make you come up with stuff that we didn't talk about.
Okay.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fair. Okay. So, there are really several different kinds of equations. I'm going to kind of mix section 1.3 and 1.2 together a little bit now. One of the things that we've been talking about, focusing on at this point in the course, is ordinary differential equations. So ODE, ordinary differential equation. Basically, an ordinary differential equation is one that doesn't have any partial derivatives in it. So it just has ordinary derivatives. And, you know, they could be classified into linear versus nonlinear. And even within these classifications, you can talk about the order of the ODE, the order of the equation. The order is the highest order derivative. So, for example, if I have a y double prime plus y prime minus 6y equals 0, what is the order of that differential equation? It's a second order differential equation. And actually, this is a very easy equation to solve. We could probably, I could tell you in 10 minutes how to solve it. But we'd be getting way ahead of ourselves in that sense. So it has a second order term, a first order term, and a zeroth order term. It's not the same as the degree of a polynomial. This is the order of derivative. So this is a second derivative, this is a first derivative, this is a zeroth derivative of the original, of the dependent variable. Now, what is the independent variable? When you don't know the answer, what's a perfectly good answer? We don't know. What could it be? T. What else could it be? X. What else could it be? A, Q, M. So you can't see what the independent variables are sometimes, but that doesn't matter. So the order just has to do with the derivative. Now, you're only going to have derivatives on the dependent variables. And we're going to keep things simple. We're not going to have derivatives on the independent variable ever in this course, although that's not ruled out entirely. And these are ordinary derivatives. Now, what if you saw this? Y double prime plus y prime minus 6 cosine t times y equals 0. Is this linear? Yes, it is linear. Doesn't matter that so it's linear in the dependent variable. Cosine is certainly not linear, but we're not interested in the linearity of the independent variable. We're only interested in the linearity or nonlinearity of the dependent variable. What if I wrote y double prime squared plus y prime minus 6y equals 0? Is that linear or nonlinear? It's nonlinear because it's nonlinear in either the dependent variable or its derivatives. So this is the derivative of the dependent variable, and it's nonlinear in that derivative. So this is a nonlinear equation. We will not be doing problems of this type in this course. In fact, in this course, we're going to be scratching the surface of what's possible. There's a lot that's out there that if you go to grad school in engineering or some, you know, physics, certainly, or anything like that, you're going to probably spend a lot of time working on some of these harder problems. Okay, so now there's ODEs and there's PDEs. What do you think a PDE is?
Partial
differential equation. And a partial differential equation is any differential equation that has a partial derivative. So the dependent variables are now functions of not just one independent variable, but more than one independent variable. And we're going to see those at the end of the course. In fact, that's really what life is all about, is partial differential equations. You know, usually we solve ordinary differential equations so that we can get to a solution of an interesting partial differential equation. That's certainly true in pretty much any area of physics or engineering that I'm familiar with. Okay. Now, there's all different kinds of other terms. You just need to read 1.3. I'm not going to say much else about it right now, but when we run into these situations, we'll talk about them. And so I want to look at something called autonomous. So dy/dt is equal to some function of y. Now, in this case, y is our dependent variable, t is our independent variable. If I can write on the left side a derivative, and we're going to only do this for first order differential equations, not necessarily linear, because anything can happen with this f of y here, but first order ordinary differential equation, then and if your right hand side is only a function of the dependent variable, then this is called autonomous. Really just depends on the dependent variable alone. Now you see that you could also have f of, let me just write this down here, dy dt could also depend on the right-hand side, not only on y, but also on t. So you could have f of y comma t here. This is not autonomous. In fact, this is much, much harder to solve than this. So if you have an autonomous differential equation, generally speaking, you're being given a gift, something that's relatively straightforward. So let's do a couple of examples of autonomous equations. So dy dt is equal to negative k times one. Okay, is that in fact autonomous?
Yes.
Because k is a constant, t is your independent variable, but there are no t's over here, so it's not a function of t on the right hand side like here. It's just a function of y. You can have constants. So now one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to call this f of y, and we're going to graph f of y as a function of y. So I'm going to put a y here, and I'm going to put an f of y here. And we're going to graph this thing. Now this is where, you think, well, I don't have to remember anything from pre-calculus. It would be helpful if you remember a little bit from those days, long ago, far away. I will help you to the extent that I can. What kind of function is this going to be?
Parabolic.
Parabolic. Very good. Can we graph it?
Yes.
Do we really need to know k? I mean, k could be some parameter, but we can... Yeah, it just makes it taller or not. Yes?
I don't know if the only conspiracy thing that I've seen a lot in engineering is if you don't define a scale for y, you can approximate any equation as long as you define your crossing point.
Well, yeah, I think what you're saying is it doesn't matter what k is. And in fact, in this case, it's not going to matter what k is. It'll affect the time course of the solution, but it's not going to affect the equilibria. And that's important. So, what are the equilibria values? What is an equilibrium in this case?
0 points.
Yeah, but in this particular problem, what's the equilibrium?
Y is equal to 1.
Y is equal to 1. Anything that makes the right-hand side equal to 0, which makes the derivative equal to 0, is going to be the equilibrium. So, y is equal to 1. So, I'm just going to put a 1 here at y equal 1. Now, how's that going to look when we graph it?
Opens to the left.
No. Y is our... Now we're plotting f of y versus y. Doesn't open up.
Opens down.
Why? Why does it open down? Because of the negative sign. And of course, k is greater than zero. Always assume that unless you're told otherwise. So, okay. So it opens down. And what's going to happen at one? Yeah, it's going to bounce there, right? So it's going to do something like... Well, that's the most horrible... Okay, that's still not very good. But that's, you know, good enough for us. Good enough, I mean... They say lead by example. Well, it's not the best, but it'll do. What is this value here? Y is 0, then you get 1, so it's negative k. If k is positive, then this is negative k. Okay, so that the magnitude of k is going to determine the steepness or shallowness of the parabola. But, okay, now, you may think we're doing a lot of wasted effort here, but actually this is extremely important. We're going to call this the phase line graph, or phase, I think the textbook actually uses the term phase line diagram. Phase line diagram. I will usually refer to it as the phase line graph, but the phase line is actually the y-axis itself, along with other markings on the y-axis. And when I say y-axis, I don't mean this axis. I mean this axis. Hopefully that's not too confusing. So, what can we infer from this? Well, let's say that you're here. And when I write that, maybe I should make a little mark on the y-axis. So, let's say you're here on the y-axis. What is going to happen to your solution? In other words, what does y want to do if y is there? It does. It wants to what?
Increase.
Y increase.
Yeah, increasing the magnitude.
But isn't the derivative negative here?
No.
Huh?
No.
No. Isn't this the derivative? And if y is here, isn't the derivative negative? Minds are bending at this moment. I mean, what did we say? dy dt is this thing, and this thing is being plotted as a function of y. And so the value of the function is negative here, it's zero here, it's negative over here. What happens when it's zero? If y is 1, 1 minus 1 is 0, so the right-hand side is 0. So the derivative is 0 at this point. This is an equilibrium. Anything that's on the y-axis in this graph, in this phase line diagram, if it's on that axis, then it's an equilibrium point. There's only one equilibrium point for this problem. It's this one. So if you're here, it means that your y is less than the equilibrium. Now, if you didn't know anything else, you would say, well, it's less than 1, but you're going to square that difference, and you're going to get positive, and this positive, and then negative. So negative times positive is negative. So your derivative is negative, so what does y want to do at this point? wants to go to the left. Wants to get smaller. What if Y is right there? What does it want to do at that point? Wants to go to the left. Wants to get smaller. Agreed?
So why does it want to go to the left?
Because the derivative is negative. The derivative of y with respect to t is negative. And any time the derivative of y with respect to t is negative, it wants to get smaller. The smaller means moving to the left on this axis.
Until it reaches
1? Until it reaches 1. And then what does it do? It sits there, and it doesn't move anymore after that, because dy dt is 0 at that point. But if it somehow started over here, it's going to race off to negative infinity. Because it's going to keep 1. In fact, the rate of change is going to continue to get bigger and bigger in absolute value. So where is this headed? Negative infinity. And so eventually the rate at which this thing gets smaller and more negative, because there's nothing preventing it from going negative, the y value. There's nothing in the model that prevents y from being negative. So, yeah, okay. So this is a special kind of equilibrium. It's not stable.
Okay.
And it's not unstable. We're not going to use the term unstable equilibrium. It's metastable. Or what's the...
Here's a better term.
Semi-stable. The textbook uses semi-stable. I don't like that term, but that's what the textbook uses. So from one side, it'll approach and it'll hang there forever. But from the other side, you get, you know, the butterfly flapping its wings. You give it just a teensy-weensy bit of wiggle room on the left side of that y equal 1, and eventually it's going to pick up steam and it's just going to go off to negative infinity. That's what we call perturbation. A little perturbation to the left will cause this thing to collapse to negative infinity. So this is a semi-stable equilibrium. Now, let me
do another example.
So dy dt is equal to r times y times 1 minus y divided by k. R is a constant. We'll assume that r is greater than 0. K is greater than 0. First of all, is it autonomous?
Yes.
So it's only a function of y on the right hand side. Now, a lot of these, I mean, they're going to be harder problems, but this is a polynomial. The problems are easier when they are polynomials, because hopefully you guys understand polynomials better than you understand other kinds of functions. And so, what is this polynomial?
Second degree,
okay. So it's second degree is quadratic. The graph of it is a parabola. Does it open up or down?
Down.
Because the negative, so you get a y times a y, but there's negative in front. So the coefficient in front of the y squared is negative, so it's going to open down. Okay, so let's do another phase line diagram. And where is the equilibrium points? Now this time there'd be two, I'll just tell you. Zero is one. So let's go ahead and mark that equilibrium point.
I'm sorry, say it again.
K, so y equals k is the other equilibrium point. So we make this k. Okay. And it opens, what did we say? Down. So once we know the equilibrium points and we know that it opens down, we know that it's quadratic, we know everything there is to know about this thing. That's all we need to do. And now we can draw our arrows and we can decide what kind of equilibrium solutions these are. If you get over here, where are you? Where are you going to go?
To the left.
If you get over here, where are you going to go?
To the right.
To the right. Okay. If you get to here, where are you going to go?
To the right.
To the right. If you get to here, where are you going
to
go?
To the left.
To the left. Okay. Which one's the stable equilibrium?
K.
K is stable. Actually, we distinguish between stable and what we call asymptotically stable. It never actually gets to K. Why does it never get to K?
Because it's, you can't have something divided by zero and be undefined, right?
No, K, Y would be equal to K. So K over K is 1. 1 minus 1 is 0. Why would it not get to K?
Because as it approaches K, the change in Y over T becomes smaller.
Yeah, what happens is it's a race to how slow can you go. You know, as you get closer and closer to that equilibrium, you're almost in a Zeno paradox kind of situation. It's just, it slows down so much. And if you solve it, you're going to see that as T goes to infinity, you get closer and closer, but you asymptotically approach K. Okay, so this is, we call this asymptotic stability. This is actually unstable, because no matter which side of this equilibrium point you're on, you know, the butterfly flapping its wing kind of thing, you get a little perturbation on the right side, this thing's going to go to the right. If you get a little perturbation on the left side, it's going to go to the left. Now, if you're over here, then it'll eventually end up very close to K. If you end up over here, then it goes off to negative infinity. Yes?
Yeah. I'm actually confused. Do you mean when it goes to the right or left, do you mean when the value of Y increases?
Well, I'm using right and left because that's our, I don't know, this is right and this is left. But, of course, this is f of y. So we're talking about the value of y. If we're to the right of this point, this is y equals 0. This is y bigger than 0. This is y less than 0. I know it's a little confusing. You got to kind of sort that out in your head. Yes?
I think it's that because I think I got it. Essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're looking at the rate of change of y with respect to t. So as t changes, then y is going to either want to increase or decrease because your graph here is the rate of change of y.
Well, this is the rate of change, but a point along that graph is the y value. It's not a rate of change value. It's a y value. So when I say it's to the right, I mean that y is positive in this case, and it's going to increase because the rate of, because dy/dt is above the y-axis.
So y is a dependent variable, where t is the independent variable.
Right.
So y is a
function. It's an autonomous system. Yeah, I think we've said it. I think you guys are just going to have to go home and think about it a little bit. So okay, so we're essentially out of time. If you want to stick around and chat, be happy to stay. I don't think anybody's going to kick us out, but if they do, then we'll have to go to office. Yes?
You wanted our sheets, Chris?
Yeah, so if you would please, turn in the information sheet here, and then I'll stay for a few minutes. If you have any questions, you're free to ask them. And I'll see you guys on Thursday.